first one is Hamid Ghaffari, who will talk about semi-continuous beam programming, an approach to gamma knife perfection.
Thanks everybody. I would like to actually make my appreciation with the field organization here and my supervisor to give me the opportunity to present our recent work. So since last year or more than around 2 years ago, so we started working on gamma knife perfection treatment planning, which is dedicated to treat the cancers and tumors inside brain and neck. I try to make it clear what is perfection first, and then I try to have a movie here, so it's a little bit entertainment right now, so we can have fun a little bit. So no voice, no sound, just the movie. So I'm going to explain a little bit the middle, so I can maybe make it bigger. Yeah, this is the official advertisement of the gamma knife perfection from Elekta, the company that's producing this unique machine to treat the tumors inside head and neck. This is just dedicated to that part of the body. Yeah, so patient lays down there. This is perfection, yeah. So yeah, we have features like that, the movement of the couch, automated movement, and three-dimensional movement there, and chamber there, so this is the place that the radiation is happening there. So, later it goes inside. Yeah, right there. So I'm going to pause a little bit here. So these are, you can see the sectors here, we call these sectors. We have 8 of them around the chamber, and each of them has 24 holes inside. So they can change into four positions, 0, and 1, 2, 3, and each position gives you different sizes of each shot. Yeah, as you see, these moving the sectors, radiation, and for each position, it gives you different size of the shot. And by combination of those 8 sectors and different sizes, you have different shapes and shot sizes that you can treat according to the size and shape of the tumor inside the brain and neck. Yeah, that's a wonderful actually treatment here. All the tumors gone and nothing hurts around the tumors, which is not the case in general. Yeah, so I guess the movie is gone. Okay, so what we are interested in this machine actually, comparing to the previous one. So we have here fully automated three-dimensional couch movement, which is actually one of our decision variables. And then we have fully automated collimator size changes. Those 4 positions of each sector gives you different sizes. Sizes are 0, 4, millimeter, 8, and 16. And then we have fully automated sector selection, which sector you want to open and which one will be closed. Yeah. The technology actually in this part is, first of all, you have a fixed frame for a head, no movement. So the technology is different right now. So we don't have any like uncertainty in the place of the, confidence. We have actually a fixed tumor somewhere. That's first actually different between IMRT and here. Yeah, but here actually, yeah, you can see one of them actually would be that one. And the other one would be actually the place that they are radiating the tumor is just trying to make less conflict with the other organs there. So this machine is just the, first of all, yeah, and all of them just result in the treatment time, yeah, time treatment would be much, much faster than the field. So here, we have just one fraction of treatment. The resolution here, it depending, actually, yeah, the feature, yeah, it's much higher than IMRT here. I think this research is specifically on gamma knife perfection. Okay. Yeah, these are actually the three components of this machine that we are focused on and use them to make a good plan here. So there are some terminologies here that we have, the voxel I'm going to use during the talk. So we have voxel, target structure, I'm going to use like critical structure, sector, which you have already familiar with, and then we have shot, H, let's say, which simultaneous delivery of radiation from any combination of sectors with different sizes. And then isocenter, this is the focal point of the beam coming out from each sector. So that's called isocenter. And then we have GTV, which is actually usually our target, gross tumor volume, which we want to remove it from the actually brain. And then, so what is the problem, of course? So we want to radiate the prescribed dose to the target. At the same time, we don't want to overdose or kill the other healthy organs around the target. And same time again, we don't want to overdose the target structure either. So we are radiating the target between some limits. So these are our constraints that we have here. So these two lines gives us the constraints here, and the first one gives us actually the decision variables. Okay, so how to solve it? Right now, actually, in the Princess Margaret Hospital, they are doing that somehow manually. They have actually the software coming with the machine. They're choosing isocenters inside the pictures that they have from the IMR, MRI. And then at the same time, we're seeing they have some scoring method that I'm going to talk about that later to see if this point is good enough or not. Then changing the point manually among those possible points, which is too much there, and then try to see which one is better. So what we are doing in terms of that part, we are doing mathematical programming to help. We don't want to actually replace them, but we want to help them to make a plan much better than what they have right now. So in this regard, actually, we present two models, one of them called isocenter optimization location, which is regarding actually to find the best location of the focal point or the isocenter inside the target or sometimes outside the target. And then you have another model, sector duration optimization, that involves the finding the intensity of each beamlet and like IMRT and the shape of the target by choosing which sector should be open, at what size, and what would be the time duration for opening that sector with this, that size. But the focus of this talk is almost about the second one, sector duration optimization. But I'm going to talk a little bit about the first one as well, the one just slide. So before again getting to the formulation that we have the model, there are some notation here that I'm going to use inside the model. S would be all the structure that we have inside the brain, of course not all of them, the ones that we are interested or critical. Number of voxels in each structure, like via of S, threshold, you can think of as prescribed dose for each structure inside the brain that you have there, and you're considering. And then we have V, set of sectors, C, set of sizes, and then we have set of feasible isocenters that you're going to find which one would be the best to use. We have three more rotations. This is our decision variable inside the SDO model that I'm going to use later. This is the time, let's say YIBC would be the time per minute. This is not second. So this is the time per minute of radiation delivery at isocenter I from sector B with size C. If this is zero, means we're going to open that sector with that size. If it's many, like 1 minute, means just open that sector with that size, focusing at that I isocenter. And then we have a DI, B, C, J, S, which indicates the dose deposition at isocenter from isocenter I by opening the sector B with size C at voxel J inside the structure S. This is given, and we are using that inside our model. So this is a parameter set here. And then the auxiliary actually variable here. I'm going to use that to simplify our model later. You see that. So this is going to be the total dose received by voxel J inside the structure F. So you see it's a linear combination of the time. So it's linearly deposited at each voxel at structure S. That's the first model that we were actually working on. It's very generic here. There is nothing that much in detail here. We have actually a set of isocenters. This model is just to find the location. No matter what would be the size, what would be the shape, this is just regardless of those time duration. This is just the finding the location. We have a scoring method to penalize, we feed a set of isocenters data within a set of feasible isocenters that we have. Usually it's almost the target or something around the target. We give a score to that one. Usually it's a penalty function. Then we need to try to minimize the penalty function to find the best set of locations. We did that in integer programming there, so I'm not gonna get into that. But the next model is the model that I'm gonna focus on today is SDO model sector duration. We are minimizing the total penalty function. There is a penalty function there, FS, which is defined down there, to penalize the dose received at each voxel inside each structure according to that formula that we have there. I'm gonna explain a little bit about that. So we are minimizing the total penalty over ZJS, which is equal to the total dose received at voxel J structure S, and we have non-negativity constraint, of course. We don't want to have negative time there. And then the definition of the penalty function. This penalty function actually consists of two terms. Each term is defined to penalize overdosing and underdosing. The first term is designed to penalize any overdose that receives voxel J structure S. This plus actually is to make sure that we are talking about the positive component of this number. And then we have, let's say, two sets of weights here, W's and P's. W's, you're going to actually weight our, exponentially weight our penalty there, and then W's would be the linear form. So depending on the situation, we change the parameters. These parameters to find a better solution. These are the tuning parameters that we usually do before the optimization or after by using right now try and error. PS's are always greater than equal zero to make sure everything is convex here. So I'm going to explain about the function that we have here, penalty function. On the left side, you see the figure that presents the penalty function receiving at voxel, let's say, J structure. Receiving at the structure S, the T here is the prescribed dose. Before that, you are not. The blue line is the underdosing penalty, and the red line. So both together, you see a nice convex shape. But here, actually, I assume T under S and T over S are the same here. Otherwise, there would be a gap between these two numbers, and falling down, get zero, and then go up. And the other one on the right side is the objective function that we have there. Of course, it would be, again, a convex function. Here again, it's in three dimensions, just see that, to make sure everything is convex, so we're happy with that. So we are dealing with nonlinear convex optimization here. So at the first time, so we decided, we have a nice model, so let's try to see what would be the result. We implement the projected gradient or gradient projection either way, basic one. So we do, we find the gradient, project that into the feasible set, and then try to find the lines, to do the line search, and then update your point and keep going. And I'm gonna just focus on these two points here. One of them is this one, just one guy. So the most time consuming of this algorithm actually was the line search here. So there was a problem with this algorithm. We did good job, we find the solution, but the time was too much. So around maybe for the result that I'm gonna show you later, it was around, let's say 20 isocenters, it takes around one day to get a good solution, which is not acceptable. So we try to understand, so what part is actually causing that. So the part was each function evaluation. So do you see the huge summation that we have here, the number of voxels depending on the resolution, depending on the size of the tumor, depending on the size of other structure around, this sum is taking too much time. So that was the problem there. So we decided to go on another algorithm that used less function evaluation. So we don't need, at least we have, let's say, a line search or function evaluation on some other function, which is much easier. So one of the trick actually at that time, it was my mind, it was why not using interior points method? In that case, we are always using, let's say, the line search on a proximity measure, which is, you know, less time consuming than objective function that we have here. So at the same time, so we model that. You'll see the model late, yeah, here. So we try to actually reformulate this. Yes. It's TP. It's TP. That's the gradient of TP. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, it's a typo here. Yeah, it's just TP. So yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just TP. So let's go back again. TP is the projection of the gradient. Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's back with you, that thing. Okay, yeah, so the problem with that was actually the, so we decided to use another algorithm to find, to have less function evaluation there. So we reformulated the model in this way. Why not directly using the interior points method on the original problem? There are actually many reasons. First of all, at that time, we were thinking about uncertainty, actually, inside our parameter, so we decided to do some, you know, something between there, so that later we will be easily to actually incorporate the uncertainty inside the data into our model. So we decided to work on like SOCP models there. So this is just some reformulation that I have for the original problem there. So I just take the objective function into the constraint, and so in that case I have a linear objective and then the nonlinear, let's say convex constraint here, and then I have that equality is nothing and the non-negativity. So I did that and used our algorithm on that one, but after actually working on that a while, I understand that if I have more constraint like nonlinear constraint, or I have more SOCP constraints, we see that later, would be much better in terms of the algorithm that I'm going to use later. Then, so we did another reformulation. I separate all penalties around for each structure separately, and for each overdosing and underdosing again separately. So right now I have, again, some more conic constraints here. Okay, so at that time, so I have a model, let's say right now it's a SOCP model or an SOCO model. I tried one of the solvers it's still one of the good solvers there. So I tried that, but due to the number of constraints that I have there, which is a huge number of constraints, it was around 50,000, let's say. I was working with Sedumi, so Sedumi couldn't handle it. I started working actually somehow to reduce the memory. Sedumi crashed and say numerical error. It was sparse matrix, and it was 50,000 by 50,000, something like that. And I sent it actually the information to the developer actually, and the developer said that they tried, and they mentioned that, okay, so there's a problem with the new version, and then they tried the previous version. Anyway, they couldn't get a good result. So we decided to stop actually working on that. So and we decided to use another algorithm that uses only the constraint that we need, not all of them. So that's why actually we get into the that's the model, actually the SOCO model that we try to get into that first. And then after all those problems that I mentioned, I moved on to the other method. These are the reasons that I mentioned that why we use the SOCO model. And after that, so we decided to go move further to go the semi-infinite linear programming. Why? Because in that case, I don't have to enter all the constraints that cause a problem into the problem, and I can add it whenever I need it or whichever I want to add. So that was the first actually intuition for using that. So this is the semi-infinite linear programming in general. So you are minimizing, or maximizing a linear function over infinite number of linear constraints. So how we model that into our, into this, how to actually reformulate our model into this approach, I guess I don't have it here. I can explain it right. So here, you see we are minimizing a linear function over a convex feasible set. So instead of considering this feasible set, I use just a tangent line for each at each point. So in that case, I have an infinitely many number of hyperplanes that is the intersection of all of them can give us exactly the same feasible set here. So instead of considering that function, all those constraints. But I'm just using whatever I, whichever it is useful right now inside the algorithm. So I'm deciding which one I'm going to use. Pardon? Sorry, I can't hear. How do I define the line?
Yeah, where are the tangent points?
Oh, yeah. So actually, in this shape, you can consider actually this point, and then all the tangents. Yeah, you consider all the tangents at any point. So in that case, you have infinitely many constants, right? So that's why. Okay. So this is the way that we translate our reformulation into the SILP approach. Okay, and pardon? Semi-infinite. Yeah, we have infinite is clear, right? Why we have infinite? Semi-infinite because y dimension of y here is finite. In general, infinite programming actually deal with infinite dimension y, infinite number of constraints. Now here, just have the same. Yeah, it's a well-established, actually, study during the last 40 years. So, but the algorithm never been that much, you know, implemented around. I guess I've seen just one software outside that dealing with semi-infinite linear programming, which is on, but it's not commercial out there. Okay. Basically, all the algorithms that are dealing with this model is just trying, iteratively, actually, trying to find an LP approximation of the original problem. That you have infinite linear number, so you have you choose a finite number of them. You start working with that. Find it. It's going to be approximation of the original problem, and then find an approximate solution to the current LP optimum. Sometimes they actually find the optimum of the LP and then keep going. But in this approach that we are doing here, we are just approximating the optimal solution of the current problem. This is the algorithm actually. That we worked on. The theory behind this is actually under review. This is a second review. Hopefully, it will be published around maybe in 5 months. I don't know. Hopefully, you can see it on OR Journal. Everything is there, so we can. I will just present the algorithm here, and the convergency, the complexity, everything is there. So we start with a unit cube there. I guess I forgot to mention the assumption that we have here. Yeah, we have basic three assumptions here. So the omega set would be closed and bounded. The functions that create coefficients and the right-hand side would be continuous in terms of t. The feasible region FB contains an epsilon should be actually fully shaped. There should be a non-interior feasible set, a full ball. Inside, and then everything, all the feasible sets should be bounded within a unit cube or any cube that would be fine. Okay, so that's why we started with unit cube. We assume all the feasible sets is inside that unit cube. You pick one point inside, and then start the algorithm. So those are the parameters that we did, that we are using actually inside the model, and then we check the the convergence, actually, let's say, the stopping criteria that we have there, actually in the paper that we going to publish later, it shows that if this condition satisfied, this is guaranteed that you have in your, you are in your local optimal. So we studied points inside that set, and then we in the first approximation that you have, there is a central path inside that ball, inside that cube. You get close to that one. You get close to the mu center. Start mu is one here, I guess. We started mu one. You get to the mu center, and then you call an oracle that actually separation procedure here to say that, okay, this point is feasible for all the constraints that you have there, or no, if it's not, gives you a number of violated costs that you can use in your model. Then, if there is a cost, or there is a constraint that violated by this point, then we update that cost, you add that cost to our current, actually, constraint, and then update your feasible set. By updating that feasible set, your current one would be infeasible. Then we do one procedure to do the recovering that infeasibility, and then reducing mu parameter, and then trying to find again another cut. Get close to the new center of the new approximation. Call the oracle. Keep going. Clear? Okay. And there is a guarantee that you can converge to the optimal, to the local optimal, if that condition satisfies. But there's a point here I want to emphasize that. Here you see the how mu actually changes here. And NK, what is NK? NK is the size of, let's say, the number of constraints that you have. So iteratively, it's going to be increased. So it's increasing that the number of constraints cause actually problem with reducing the total multiplication. So in that case, you can say it's going to take forever. Theoretically, it's convergence is exponentially actually convergence. So it's not as good as, you know, all the other algorithms around. The reason is clear, because we are not considering all constraints at the same time. We are adding infinitely many constraints here. So we have infinitely many constraints that actually makes sense that we have. We don't have any polynomial solvable algorithm. Okay, so just to brief introduction for all of, for some of you that you are not familiar with this algorithm. So we start with approximate feasible set, and then this is our current central path, current mu center, and then this is the Tesla neighborhood of that current mu center. We get close to that one. We start the algorithm from there, and then we call the oracle to find if this is feasible or not. In that case, it's not. Update your feasible set. This new feasible set has its own central path, new mu center, actually associated to the new mu. So the previous mu, so let's say it was 1, 1, the new mu is 1/2, and you can keep going that way. So you can consider that this is going to be your new mu center inside the new approximation. Again, get infeasible recovery step, get close to the current mu center, call the oracle, find again, cut, update your feasible set, new mu center, and so on and so forth. So this is how it works. Okay, so we did numerical tests on these two approaches that we had. The first one shows, this actually figure shows two structures around. This actually boundary is the tumor's boundary in one slice, and then we have the brain stem around. So we used an approach to find isocenters here, which right now actually these points are given by ball packing algorithm that we have with the scoring method that Kimia provides that. So we solve the model. These points show the isocenters. The blue ones means they are on the lower layer, the red ones on the higher ones. So these are not all in the same layer. And then we have the dose deposition color here. So the prescribed dose for this target was 12 around here. And the constraint, actually, the major constraint that they have, they don't want to have, they want to have 100% of the target receive 100% of the dose prescription. But in this figure, maybe it's not clear. I put it there because sometimes it was actually one of the first measures that they used to see if the results are good. This is another figure that's more actually informative here. So in this line, you see the red. This is again the field figures are target and the brain stem, and the red line shows the 95% prescribed dose. Says everything inside receiving 95% of the prescribed dose, and the blue line says 50%. So that's a fairly good plan in terms of clinical point of view. But in this figure, you cannot see what's happening to the other organs, so which is not clear. So again, we use another scoring method to find out if this is a good way of treating or not. In this figure, we are considering all the organs inside the brain that is what was considering inside. So this is called actually dose volume histogram, which is actually a normal way of evaluating any treatment. Here, the blue line actually says the dose deposited in target. Whereas this point here shows 100% of the target receives 100% of the dose prescription. And we don't want to have more than 200, let's say, double size of prescription dose here, so which is clearly actually satisfying what clinical procedure actually needs for. And the brain stem here actually shows around less than 2% of the brain stem receiving more than 100% dose deposition, which is actually again acceptable because you see those actually overlapping that we have on the tumor and the brain stem. Okay, so these are showing all of them actually evaluating what we've done. It's perfectly fine. But the time here, as I mentioned before, the time here was too much. So we decided to do the other algorithm. The other algorithm actually results shows again the same, almost the same good result here. So here, see, you don't have that much uniformity here. So here it's much kind of more uniform, but although we have more hot spots around, but here it's a little bit, you know, it's not that much uniform, but still we cannot say according to the picture which one is better. You go further, actually, you again into the isodose line plot. You see again these are satisfying almost 100% of the prescribed dose receiving 100% of the dose deposition, 95% of the dose deposition, and which is fine again in terms of clinical point of view. Okay, so again, it's evaluating our approach. The algorithm works, that's fine, and the time would be much better than projective gradient. Okay, so again, that's another point, but there is actually a little bit different here. The previous method you saw, we have less overdosing here, but here again a little bit different. It's just part of the tuning parameters, so that's one of the challenges that we have here, how to actually, what would be the strategy to make those tuning, let's say, automatically or some intelligent way. Right now what we are doing, just trying to put the value and try actually find use our experiment to tune it again to get better results. Okay, so and how they behave actually in terms of convergence. The projected gradient algorithm, as usual, you see a sudden drop, very steep drop, and then the objective value here. You see the objective value here, and it's just like smooth line, vertical line. So that's the objective value. The second one is the norm of the changes on the decision variable that we have there. So D of X, norm of D of X is here. You will see how actually bumpy is that. And then relative improvement on the objective function, you'll see that. So this is one of the challenges that we have here. So we don't know where actually to stop. If you are stopping here, which is actually the relative improvement is less than 10 to, let's say, 4 of that minus 10 to the minus 3, let's say, something like that. Is it good or not? You'll see, according to the improvement, you'll see that, no, it's not going to be a good actually stopping criteria. So none of them can help us to stop better, which is not the case in terms of the SILP approach. In the SILP approach, this curve actually can help us actually a lot. So in this figure, you see the iterations, and in blue line and the red line here. The red line is the upper bound, and blue line is the lower bound for the optimum value of the current approximation, LP approximation. So in each iteration, we have an LP approximation of the original problem, and it has a lower bound and upper bound. So as soon as you get, so you can stop right after the lower bound and upper bound, what we call it duality gap, is less than some measure. So it's actually because we are using heuristic actually to reduce the mu parameter here, there is no guarantee that you'll get a good optimum solution right now here. But if you choose your approximation in each iteration very carefully, then you, at least you can say here, I cannot get better and any better result after this point. That's actually the good, at least you can say, okay, so I'm going to stop the algorithm. You cannot get better than this. Check it if it's okay or not, then try it again. But in previous approach, you cannot do that. You don't know if you're going to get better later or not. So you're going to run it forever and you get nothing. Okay, so that's another actually feature. The timing comparison here, I have a comparison between the, again, projected gradient and CGIP. So in this figure, actually, you see these two lines, which is very curly here. The blue one is the time, the total time per iteration in CGIP, and the red line shows only the time that spend the algorithm on finding, on doing the centering part. From the after recovery, you get close to the mu center. I call that centering part. Actually, it's so-called centering part. So you see the most time inside the algorithm is spending just to find the centering. So a way of doing better centering there would help us a lot. But in projected gradient, you see, again, the green line shows the total time per iteration, and the lower one, which is, I guess, kind of blue, you know, it's showing the time for the line search, only line search there. So again, you see the bottleneck of the algorithm is, again, the line search versus centering inside a projected gradient. One of the differences here is you see that as time goes on, the time per iteration goes up. So the reason, I guess everybody can see that. So at each iteration, I'm adding more constraint. So the, for centering part, I'm dealing with the bigger and bigger and bigger matrix. Although the size of, let's say, A transpose inside the centering part is almost the same, but the time per multiplication to matrix would be much bigger. So that's why, that's one of the actually problem here. If your problem get into some problem and it's not converging, the time is going to be much, much bigger than what you have before. So you want to have convergence as soon as possible. Okay, that's one, again, observation here. So we have two algorithms right now. The PG projected gradient is easy to implement. It's just a function evaluation. The projection is very fast, and everything is almost just the function evaluation here is the problem. No system of equation solving, of course, there is no just find the objective value, the gradient, and go further. Too much function evaluation per iteration due to the line search. Sometimes line search takes, you know, like maybe 20 iterations. So each iteration, you have 20 times the number of outer loop. This is actually a huge number of function evaluation. No guarantee to get into an epsilon solution in finite time because of that actual behavior. So stopping criteria doesn't help you that much to stop in time or in a good position. Instead, CGIP guaranteed to get into an epsilon solution in finite time. Of course, it can be exponential, but it's finite, at least you can get there. But the good point is as soon as the duality gap inside gets into, you know, some small number, you can stop there. You can say, oh, it's not going to get better than this. Whatever you have, that's it. And then only one function evaluation in each iteration. You have only one function evaluation to find the cuts. The Oracle using just one function evaluation to find the cuts. And then the line search that we have inside the interior point method is on the proximity measure that we have there. And then relatively hard to implement due to the solving, per iteration, I'm solving a nonlinear system by the Newton method for the like the normal equation that I'm going to solve there. So per iteration, that's, again, the challenge there. And then I have to use heuristic, actually, to stop in a reasonable time. Otherwise, if I'm following just the theory that I have there, it's going to take forever. And I tried it, actually. After 1 week, I got nothing again. So, I mean, it didn't stop. So, and a nonlinear system of equations, yeah, should be solved at each iteration. So that's the major difference between these two approaches. I guess I'm going a little bit faster. Okay, so in summary, actually, we have presented actually two different approaches, algorithms that we practice on our cases. Projected gradient is recommended if each objective function evaluation is cheap, because I'm using, there's one story actually I'm going to tell you about that later. And then if your function evaluation is not cheap and each iteration takes too much time, definitely you'd go to the, at least in these two comparisons, you go to CGIP. CGIP is also, and then we presented the model that can handle uncertainty, hopefully in the future. Work. Yeah, sure. Oh, okay. So I'm in time. And future work, of course, it is just actually a briefly introduction what we are going to do it later. Parameter tuning strategy, as I mentioned, it's always a problem. And then reducing centering procedure time in CGIP. Optimization models, actually, that right now I'm working on that is the dealing with the isocenter location and the time. And then thanks to our sponsors, Elekta, the company that produces the machine, and NSFIC Discovery Grant, the Canadian Foundation for Innovation, and thanks. I didn't try that. If there is any. Okay, so I grab her later. Actually, due to the frame that, you know, we have the frame on the head of the patient, then they take the pictures, then we have to keep the frame on the head until the end of the treatment. So this is going to be, actually, the patient would be there while we are doing the computation. That's why we don't want to take, you know, 1 day for just one computation. Yeah, the time is very, actually, important here. Pardon? Isn't used? Here in the hospital, not yet. Not yet. Hopefully in the recent or in the future.
You have these gradients.
Yes.
Are they in both methods or
just in the weighting? No, weighting is both methods. I'm using the same function for both.
Okay, so I guess I'm worried a little bit about, well, firstly, how do you adjust the weight? How do you
fix it? Yeah, as I mentioned, actually, that's one of the challenges that we have. Actually, there are some intuition first. So I'm doing the target. So I'm going to make sure that this target, this structure, gets more actually the what I want to prescribe to that. So I'm going to make much more higher weight for that structure. Like, you know, so I have comparison of the numerical that I have in my mind. So for the organs that I have at risk, let's say I put 1, and but for the target, I put 1,000.
Yeah,
actually, I did it in the mixed integer programming that I had there. I have a hard constraint there, but the problem is again finding the feasible point would be again a problem inside.